What if the honeybees are here to save us? Today, my special guests, Amy Bertain and Michelle Cassandra Johnson, co-authors of the book, The Wisdom of the Hive, What Honeybees Can Teach Us About Collective Well-Being, and I are going to talk about this question and more. We'll talk about bees as role models of adaptability, special lessons the bees have gifted these two authors, and they'll even share with us a practice and contemplation or two that you can do right now to create more honey inside, all from the hive.
I am but a part of this. All I am is all I give. Everything that comes to me comes as sure as I will breathe.
Do you remember that a world on fire is also a world ripe for solutions? Do you feel committed to gorgeousness in your life, this world, and for those who inhabit our planet? Did you know that already inside of you, you have the perfect tool to help you navigate these times, adding positively to your life and the world? Friend, here is the great news. Intuition works at lightning speed, and you were born with it. It's the internal sense that you have uniquely tailored to you and designed to not only set you on the roads that are best for you, but also help you avoid the ones that are treacherous. I'm your host, Aimé Cartier. I've been a professional psychic since around 2007. I'm the author of the book, Getting Answers, Using Your Intuition to Discover Your Best Life. I've been teaching others to understand and use their own intuitive brilliance for more than a decade. Join me each week on the Intuition for Changemakers show for true stories and tools that will inspire you to harness your intuitive birthright to heal, shine, tend, and nourish yourself and this world. Welcome to the Intuition for Changemakers show. Today, you are in for a special treat because I have with me in the studio two beloved students of mine, Michelle Cassandra Johnson and Amy Bertain. If you are a regular listener, you might remember Michelle from episode 8 of my show, which was then called Own Your Intuition. When these two lovelies told me that they had a new book coming out, which they co-authored together, entitled The Wisdom of the Hive, What Honeybees Can Teach Us About Collective Well-Being, I was excited to invite them to the show. So thank you for being here, Michelle and Amy.
It's a delight to be here.
Thank you for having us. Lovely to see you. Lovely to be here.
Before we really dig into the book, I really wanted to give you all a little background on these two lovelies. Michelle Cassandra Johnson is an author, activist, spiritual teacher, racial equity consultant and educator, and intuitive and shamanic healer. She approaches her life and work from a place of knowing we are, can, and must heal individually and collectively. Michelle facilitates workshops and immersions, leads retreats and transformative experiences nationwide, and offers an array of healing services for individuals and groups. For over 25 years as a racial equity educator, she has worked with large corporations, nonprofits, and community groups. Michelle is a 5-time published author, and right now, she has her 6th book coming out, co-written with her best friend, Amy Bertain, which we are going to talk about today. Michelle leads courageously from the heart with compassion and a commitment to address the heartbreak dominant culture causes for many because of the harm it creates. She inspires change that allows people to stand in their own humanity and wholeness in a world that fragments most of us. She lives in North Carolina with her husband, sweet dog Jasper, and her honeybees. Amy Bertain is a facilitator, anti-racist trainer, teaching artist, and coach who is committed to collective liberation. She has worked nationally and internationally as a community-based theater educator, specializing in theater for social change, and is a facilitator of the work of the Theater of the Oppressed. She believes that the arts can help us envision a world that is socially just, equitable, and free of oppression, where everyone can find and use their voice, and where all voices are heard equally. Her greatest passion is working with groups and communities to use the tools of play to find connection, collaboration, and healing. She currently works in collaboration with BIPOC partners to bring anti-racism training and equity processes to organizations. She co-authored the book on facilitating white affinity spaces as anti-racist practice with Robin DiAngelo that was released in 2022. Amy lives on an island in the Puget Sound, which happens to be Vashon, where I live, with her husband and son, two dogs, and two beehives. So first of all, I just want to start with a title and the cover because it's so beautiful, but collective well-being is such a hot topic to me right now, and one that can be easy to lose sight of, but also one that is so important to actually creating a future that feels aligned and supportive for the collective. So, Michelle, you wrote about honeybees as role models for adaptivity. And I would wonder if you would just start us out speaking about this message and why you think it's so important right now.
Thank you, Aimee. There are a couple things I'll share about the way honeybees adapt. And one is that we're being asked, or we are asking them, to adapt to rapidly changing conditions given climate chaos and what humans, myself included, have created throughout time. The untenable conditions that make it difficult for the more than human world to adapt at the pace it needs to survive. Mm. And whenever I lean into this knowing that we are affecting the honeybees and other parts of the more than human world in grave ways, actually, I'm also present to the fact that honeybees have been around for billions of years. And it's part of their magic. It's not that I want them to have to adapt. I think part of their magic is their resilience, their ability to work between realms, their ability to change the way they function, even though they always function as a super organism, which I'm sure we'll talk about a bit more later, but to shift the way they function in order to sustain themselves and survive. So that's one piece about adaptability. And part of their survival, and I shared a story about this earlier today, has to do with the different roles that they play. And you use this word role in your question, role model, the different roles they play within the hive. And so, you know, you have nurse bees and worker bees and undertaker bees and bees that build honeycomb. And then the final part of their life cycle as a bee, and their life cycle is usually around 6 weeks, is that they become foragers. And who knows what other roles they play, right? This is what we've observed as humans, and we're not bees. And so I imagine there are other things going on that we cannot translate, that we don't understand. One thing I love about these different roles is that depending on what the hive needs, and this has to do with care, in particular collective care, And the fact that we're in deep relationship with one another, they can shift roles. So they can revert back to a previous role they've held based on the conditions in the hive or outside of the hive and what's most needed. And this feels like such a teacher, such a teacher for us to think about, how do we adapt? How do we shift? How do we, and I know we'll talk about attunement, become present to and awaken to and also attune to what's in place so that we can show up in the best way possible, not just for ourselves, but for the collective, and not just for now, but also for the future. So that's where I'll begin.
Beautiful, beautiful. I love it. So Amy, one of the things that you wrote in your chapter on attunement, you mentioned empathic and very sensitive people and the maladaptations that some of those people who we are among my listeners, let's just say you both know that I've worked with empathic people for many years. Some of the maladaptations that some empathic people have had to make to compensate for their sensitivity, and adaptations that have led us to attuning to a person of power or placating a person of power instead of attuning to our own selves and our rhythms. You wrote beautifully, Amy, these old ways of attunement may have served us well in the past, but as we move toward a healed collective, it is important that we practice and reclaim a collective attunement that is more akin to the life-giving and life-sustaining ways of bees. It is literally the reason we wrote this book. So I wondered, kind of within the same vein, but I wondered if you would talk about this and what you think the bees have to teach us in this.
Yeah, thank you so much for the question. And I was thinking, even when you were asking Michelle about adaptation and the way that Michelle was responding, I keep thinking of that, as Michelle was saying, it's like asking what is needed now and what is needed now and what is needed now. And that needs to keep shifting moment to moment, right? Community to community, situation to situation. And I think, as Michelle said, the bees are real masters at adapting, and they're masters at attunement. And when I think about what I wrote there, I was thinking about how so many of us come from dysfunctional family systems where there was, a lot of trauma or pain, and we had to kind of be really attentive to people around us in order to survive or in order to not get harmed or in order to not have someone explode or whatever the situation was. And Michelle and I are very deeply involved in the work of social justice, and we know that so many marginalized people, because of systems of oppression, have always been trained to adapt to those in power, to have to attune, to know, how is this person going to show up? Because how they show up and how they see me affects my survival. And those are the necessary levels of attunement. But what we hope for and pray for, and the reason we wrote this love letter to the bees, is we wish that we could be more like them. And we think about attunement in many, on three levels, right? There's like, I have to be able to attune to myself and my own nervous system. And that is much of the work that you do as well, Amy, right? How do I connect with my own intuition? How do I connect with my breath, my own body? How do I re-embody? So there's that level of attunement for me as an individual. And then there's the attunement that we do in between one another, you and I, you and Michelle, one another. How do we attune to each other's feelings? How do we show up for one another? How do we feel the energetic exchange, which, you know, modern life has deadened us to in a lot of ways or keeps pulling us away from? And then systems of oppression, Michelle and I talk about all the time, are the divide and conquer, right? They're trying to pull us apart from each other and from one another. So we have to attune to that sort of collective need, not just my need or you and my need, but our collective needs.
Yes, I love it. And the attuning, I would say, the attuning first to self helps one not get lost when then we're also thinking about the collective, everyone, either it's the person next to you or what society as a whole needs. So I love it. Beautiful. I love that you mentioned the love letter to the bees, because that is really how I felt this book when I was reading it. Even to this simple thing where there's something where you say, Michelle, about my interpretation was, please don't kill bees. They actually won't kill you. They don't want to kill you. They die after that. That's the way that I feel like I've been saying it for life. But I love even that you included this They're not alarming. They actually are just doing their job. So even that tiny little thing, just this love letter to a species. And I still remember 20 years ago, it was on a solstice when I witnessed a swarm. Wow. And it still blows my mind to think about it. It's hard to describe the magic and the mesmerizingness of it. And I just deep dived. I mean, for weeks, I researched bees. I have like files on all this. I was for sure going to keep bees, which I did start. And then I had children and the hive, my own human hive, became the priority. But I feel the mesmerizing nature of these creatures that I have already witnessed in my own life within the pages of this book. And so I would love it even just a little bit from each of you on your own relationship or entry into that mesmerizing place of these creatures.
You want to start, Michelle?
Sure. Yeah, two things. There are so many things, but two things. One is, and we share about this in the book, the way bees came to us, which is often how people think it happens, that they come to us. And I don't know that I dreamt about them, although I think I did, because what happened is at 4 a.m, I realized I had ordered everything one needs to keep bees, and I had never taken a beekeeping class. And I only realized I had ordered things when I saw the cost, and then I charged my credit card, and then I woke up and immediately sent a text to two friends who are bee priestesses and bee tenders like me. And I said, I ordered bees. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what is going on. And they assured me they would help me. And one of them did help me hive my first two hives that lived here. And now I have 5 hives. And, you know, we've written an entire book about the lessons, and there are more. And so I will share that I continue to learn so much from the bees, just from watching them, from standing next to their hives, which I did earlier, from watching them bring in resources, from listening to their hum, from watching it, you know, how they dart across the sky, how they ascend and disappear and then come back into focus. You know, my curiosity about what they're bringing into the hive, if I can't actually see it, I can see pollen, but I can't see the other things. Sometimes I can see tree resin for propolis. So I'm constantly mesmerized by these mystical and practical teachers and creatures. And the other, since you mentioned a swarm, I caught my first swarm about a month ago. And I've had my hives, I know, they swarm every spring and they go up too high for me to get them. And I happened to be home. And I heard the buzz, the hum, it's loud. You can hear it through windows. And I went outside and I watched and I caught them at the right time. And I asked them to land on my side because the tree was in my neighbor's yard where they always land. And I ran inside and grabbed a singing bowl to engage in a practice called tenging, which is a practice Amy and I learned in this nature-based shamanism program where you can use a metal pot and a wooden spoon or a singing bowl. And I started to hit the singing bowl, and these bees, the swarm had not landed yet. They were up high in the sky, and I watched them drop down out of the sky onto a branch low enough for me to gather them. And they let me gather them and they stayed. Their name is Artemis. And I just, to be so close to something so wild is, I don't even have words for it, really. Like the wildness of that, being in the swarm, shaking it in a box and then feeding them and sitting with them. And it, you know, I love all of my hives, and there's something different about them saying yes to my gathering them.
Totally.
So that was enchanting in its own right, you know, this experience of collecting them. And when so many have gone off, right, and they're in the neighborhood somewhere, they allowed me to gather them. And they're 5 feet from where they swarmed from, right? Their hive, that they home hive, is right there, and they've created another. And so it's been a really beautiful unfolding.
Beautiful. Mm. Just what a treasured experience. I know from my own experience with the hive there, with the swarm.
Yeah, a swarm is it's an otherworldly experience. It's a mesmerizing Truly. Experience. And it's a birthing too, right? Because it's the hive leaving off to make, you know, the queen goes off to make a new hive and a queen stays behind, or a queen is reared behind. I mean, so everything we think about the bees is metaphorical, which is why we wrote this book, because everything we think of, we're like, oh, well, that's a lesson, you know? And I think, you know, how did I get attracted to the bees? I was talking about this earlier as well. I have dreamt about them for years and not in the same way Michelle does, where they tell me like, here, come do this to the hive. But I remember even before keeping bees, I tell this in the book, I was in a very unhealthy relationship, kind of an emotionally abusive relationship. And in the dream, I'm in this house with the boyfriend I had at the time. Mm-hmm. And we hear this really loud buzzing in the walls. And so I have this sense of danger, like, am I in danger or something wrong? What's the matter? And then the boyfriend, in a kind of typical energetic way, punches a hole in the wall, which was metaphoric of how he kind of showed up in the world. And in the hole where he punched is a very live, vibrant hive and honey dripping in the walls. And I remember that to this day. I mean, that's over 30 years ago I had that dream. Mm. And to this day, I remember it because it was so vibrant. And I think it was, I always say, like, when the bees kind of get in your cells, they become a part of you. Like, you're just fascinated by them. You're called by them. So I was constantly wanting to be around bees or be around people who were tending bees. And that's how my sort of fascination started. And then years later, when I lived in Brazil, I got a chance to harvest honey with a neighbor of ours. We lived in a rural part of Brazil, a partner of mine at the time. And our neighbor Klaus had 16 hives, and he invited my partner Shasha and I to go and help him harvest. And that, again, was magical because we were in an area of the country that didn't yet have electricity. So we spent all day out in the heat, right, of the kind of hot Brazilian summer, collecting the supers and collecting the frames. And then we went into a shed at night just by candlelight and, you know, just by hand uncapped all of the wax from all of these frames and spun this honey all night long. And I, again, can feel and smell the, like, the golden ribbons of honey coming out of the honey spinner. And I can smell the propolis, and I can smell the pine that was in the honey, and I can smell the honey itself. And it just was like one of the most ecstatic experiences I've ever had. And it was definitely not human temporal time. It was like bee time. It was like mystical time. It was really phenomenal. And so those two experiences are sort of pivotal experiences for me. And there have been many others, being involved in swarms, like you said, that make me feel like, oh, more, please.
Totally. Yes, please. And just a continuous enchantment. I don't know. I feel like you were mentioning being called. It feels to me like if that has called you, it doesn't go away. I don't keep hives, but I only use beeswax candles, and I light them every single day when I go out to my studio before I see clients or before I do any writing. I do that. And I think part of it is because if they're chanting to you, they just don't stop talking. Whether your relationship is close, like the two of you have these intimate relationships, or whether you're just like me, who are like, this is holy and sacred, and I want it in my presence to do work. Beautiful. So the book flows through a bunch of different, it's broken down into meditations, illustrations, poems, practices, some that include movement, sound, and vibration. And it really is broken down into these different elements that you're bringing to all of us through your words that are indicative of the hive and how you're feeling they're reflective in this world right now. And just, I'm saying that for listeners, so you kind of have a framework of how the book is built. And I was interested in which one of these, if there's one, I know this would change throughout time and throughout phases and moments in life. So what you say today might not even be the same for next month or before, but I was interested in knowing which one of these elements is speaking to you most vibrantly in the moment and how it's showing up in your life. So if either of you or both of you would mind telling us the element, a little bit about it, and then how it is really speaking to you in your life right now. I'd love that.
I'm in love with all of the elements, and the one that is new is this book includes poems, as you shared, and none of my previous books have included poems. And I'm not even sure how. I know Amy and I spoke about it, right? The different elements. We knew we wanted questions and practices and narratives, right? And the poems, they feel like they're part of the Bee mysticism. And they also feel like they were channeled from the bees through me. And they're related to the stories and narratives that are shared in each chapter, as well, the themes that we explore throughout the book. And even there's an audio version of the book as well, and even how I read the poems is different than how I read the stories, right? Or even shared the questions. And so that element I'm feeling in love with, because it also aligns with something that's happening for me related to singing, and vibration. And I'm in a sound healing training right now that I'll complete at the end of June. I've been chanting more and singing more with a group of people, and we are leading kirtans and performing. So it feels like it's synchronous and no mistake that the poems, which feel lyrical in a way, right, match this period of time where we're trying to elevate the song of the bees and share that and raise, I would say, the planetary vibration so that we can heal in the ways that we need. So that's the element I'm present to.
Love it. Beautiful.
I love that, Michelle. That just gave me chills. I'm thinking about the elements as we wrote them, in the book. So many beautiful pieces that the bees embody, like alchemy and transmutation and sweetness and darkness. But the one that I'm sitting with personally right now is medicine. And we talk about how everything the bees make is medicinal in some way, certainly for the bees, for their own health, and the protection of the hive, but also for humans, which is one of the great gifts that the bees share with us, and that we need to be really, we need to honor when we take from the bees and not overtake, which is a very human thing, right? I'm going to take all of it because I want it, and so we think about, like, propolis is medicinal and honey is medicinal and even bee stings are medicinal, and there's so many elements, wax, like you were saying, when you light a candle, there's something sacred, there's something really powerful that happens from the scent and the medicine and the history and the stories and the flower essences in that wax. So I'm really loving this idea for us as humans of what is our medicine? Like, what is medicine for us? What are the things that help heal me or help heal us? But also, what is the medicine each of us has to offer? And I think that's the thing I'm really excited about right now, especially at this time on the planet. I think Michelle and I talk about this all the time, right? In these unbelievable stressors that we are under, and climate collapse and political upheaval and war and all the things that are happening that can really take a spirit down. It can feel like overwhelming. What can I do to change that? And we truly believe that each of us has a very powerful, not only one, but certainly medicine we can offer. I think about it, that I love the work of play, right? And I believe that, if you can help others laugh, that's a powerful medicine. If
Totally.
you are a massage therapist or a talk therapist, that's a powerful medicine, right? If you are somebody who leads groups, that's your medicine. If you're somebody who farms and feeds people, that's your medicine. And I think people get intimidated, like, well, I'm not of this, or I'm not good enough at that. And we tend to sort of dampen our own light and hide our own medicine. And I think what we want also to encourage people is, like, live into the medicine you have to offer, because the world really needs it and the world really needs you. And so does the environment. And so I want to encourage people to be like, bring it, give us your medicine.
Yes, I love that. And I love that you mentioned play, because I know behind the scenes of this podcast and book that both of these lovelies do an amazing amount of social activism work and social justice. But I know that you are veering more into what is an old love, or maybe an ever through love of you with play, and bringing that to more people. And so I can see how poignant that would be. And I love you bringing up all the aspects of it, because one thing in, if you're a regular listener, you know that since the beginning of the year, I started with this sort of ladder of what I consider medicine of like, okay, what do we need right now for medicine for ourselves to be able to move in the current world that we live in a way that is not toppling us. So I love it. I love the element of that, and also love just the play work that you are moving to and doing, or I should say moving back to.
Me too. Play is medicine, for sure.
I love it. So good. So, Michelle, do you want to read us one of the poems? Because you mentioned it. And
yes, I do. I just have to get to... Well, this is the one that wants to be read. It is from a chapter titled Inflamed, and there's an entire section about the sting and venom and the inflammatory response and what it actually means to become inflamed. And the poem is titled Phoenix, and Phoenix was a hive that I have that I had. They died one winter when it was unseasonably cold. Phoenix, night after night, the fire's dancing flames mesmerized me. I wondered what the flames of fury and magic were communicating in the dark of the night. It seemed as if figurines of ancestors, animals, memories, and energetic forms emerged. Over time, the logs burned down, turning to ash. On this particular starry night, a honeybee flew over to the fire, almost as if she was joining us in the nightly ritual of communing with the flames. First, she sat on the edge, and before we could stop her, she jumped into the fire. A sacrifice, I thought. This bee came from a hive named Phoenix. A phoenix she was indeed. We rise from the ashes, energetic forms made of ancestors, animals, and memories.
So beautiful. And as you're reading it, I'm just thinking of how, I mean, I'm stopping myself from tearing up here. Just how much she is a phoenix in rising in this moment, sharing with all of us right here. Beautiful. Still alive in that.
Yes.
So good. Okay. So one of my favorite things about the book was the questions asked throughout. And both of you know my work and that I have a whole book about how essentially to me, questions can and do shape the state of your life. And they are so poignant. And I'm not going to talk about my book, but what I would love is if one of you would read a set of questions, because just as a reader, I love the invitation of this moment. As I'm reading along, all of a sudden, there are questions I might ask myself, which I am as I'm reading. And so it feels like an opening to me. Questions feel like an energetic opening instead of, you know, like the difference of writing is often or can be like a lecture form where you're receiving. And this is just a poignant moment where all of a sudden you're right there and something is happening and can be happening just by the asking of the question. So I would love if one of you would read a set of questions from the book.
Yeah, I'd love to read some. I think we could maybe read some, depending on how much time you have. But I want to read from the chapter on sweetness. Mm-hmm. And I want to offer this as an invitation to sweetness. And I'll preface it by saying that you and I both live here on Vashon mm-hmm. Island, which is the first place that I've kept my own or tended to my own hives, which has been a really profound and beautiful experience for me. And I remember the first year that I harvested honey, this really interesting thing happened where I was so excited and all I wanted to do was give it to people, like, oh, you know, like honey became my love language. Like I wanted to give it to my neighbors and my friends and everyone. I just wanted to give it away. And then when I got down to kind of the last jars, that I'd sort of saved for my family, I started to get really precious about it. Like, oh no, mm. I better save it. What if there's no more? What if there's never any honey again? You know, like all these scarcity questions that we get into where we think, oh, I better hold back, right? And so we wrote the chapter on sweetness also as an invocation for people to remember to taste sweetness, share sweetness. So here's the questions from part of that chapter. What sweetness do you have in your life? What sweetness can you share with others? What sweetness do you crave from others? How can you cultivate more sweetness in your life? What does that look like, sound, and feel like? Where do you deny yourself sweetness? How can you give yourself permission to taste and share all of the sweetness that comes to you? How can you bring sweetness into the lives of others?
Beautiful. What a lovely contemplation for this moment and all moments. Michelle, are you keen to do that? Or I have another question for you too. It's up to you.
Yeah, I have some questions from chapter one, which is, what if the bees are here to save us? What if the earth, the honeybees, the towering pine forests, the coral reef are all here to save us? What if the sun and all its solar glory and the moon and its ability to illuminate what we need to remember to return to the natural cycles of waxing and waning are here to save us? What if the earth is a mirror, just as the honeybee hive is, reflecting back the suffering that we create and the wisdom and resiliency we embody? What if the living laboratory of our ecosystems are here to show us how deeply interconnected we are with all living beings and how many opportunities we have to free ourselves from our self-serving destructive patterns?
I love it.
And yeah, this is based on, you know, the book opens with, what if the bees are here to save us, to flip things on their head. because often there's this, we need to save the bees, and we do need to shift our relationship with the bees and change our behavior and stop. We need to interrupt climate chaos and climate collapse. And a teacher, Ariella Daly, she was the first teacher who offered this question, like, what if they're actually here to save us as a mirror to show us what we need? And I love thinking about that because I think it dismantles the human to more than human world hierarchy that exists.
Beautiful. Agreed. Wholeheartedly. So not too long ago, I think it was episode 85, I had a woman named Erin Collins on the show who taught us some breath work. And the thing that was so wonderful to discover in your book was this practice of humming with the hive. And it played so the link is that one of the breaths that she taught us was called the honeybee breath. I think that was the name of it, the exact name. But and obviously, just even by the name itself, it's talking, showing us the same sort of a thing of what honeybee is here to teach us, giving us this example of, it's a nervous system regulating tool, which pinged for me when I was reading about your humming with the hive practice. So I wondered if one of you might just, I think of this as a gift to our listeners of, would share this particular practice with all of us so that people could try it. And there are many more lovely practices in the book, but I'd love to hear one of you describe it.
Michelle, I'll have you lead it and I'll add in if there's anything I want to add.
Okay. So I first heard about, sometimes it's called bumblebee's breath, Brahmari breath. For those listeners who might be yoga practitioners, that breath might actually show up in other spiritual lineages as well. And Brahmari breath is where you breathe in and with your mouth closed hum or buzz like a bee would. It's considered a calming, cooling breath. And you mentioned regulating the nervous system. And it is the sound the hive makes when there's harmony within the hive. You know, that the pitch will change, the note will change if there's disharmony that exists within the hive or something's wrong, right? When bees mourn, there's a different sound that's happening, or if they don't have a queen, there's a different sound that, or if I'm in the hive and do something too quickly, there's a change in this calm hum that I'll lead. And so I would invite folks, you can be as you are, you can close your eyes or keep them open, and we will hum for a few rounds through this breath practice, this pranayama practice. And so I invite you to take a deep breath in and a deep breath out. And you can take another deep breath in and deep breath out, just returning to your breath. And if you'd like, you can imagine yourself standing or sitting next to a honeybee hive, taking in the sound of their hum. And the way we'll do this, as I said, is you'll breathe in, and with your mouth closed, you can buzz or hum. If there's a different way you want to practice this to make it more accessible and to meet you where you are, you can. Many of us know how to hum and have actually for a long time. In fact, children hum all of the time to self-regulate. So I invite you, as you feel ready, take a deep breath in. And then begin to hum. Take two more rounds. Take a deep breath in and a deep breath out, just noticing how those three hums and the breath may have shifted things for you. You can return to this practice whenever you want to connect with the holy and humble honeybee, and also regulate your nervous system and attune to yourself. And it's a way we can attune to one another as well.
Beautiful. Thank you. I already feel more relaxed just from doing that. So I want to finish with, if you, I know you have an event coming up on Vashon, for listeners that are listening to Voice of Vashon or that are in our vicinity. I would love to know the date and time, details, where of that, and anything else you have, both like in the Northwest area or and where people can find out where the next things are, if some of our listeners are on the East Coast or wherever they are.
Sure. So for the folks on Vashon, we're going to be at the Vashon Bookshop, and that'll be on Friday, June 6th at 5 o'clock. So we welcome everyone. Please come. We're also going to be at Elliott Bay Books on June 4th at 7:30 p.m. So and would love to have locals or folks in the Pacific Northwest or the Seattle region come there. We also are going to be doing an online, and I'm not sure of the date of this. Michelle, remind me if you know, for East-West Books. Okay. We're going to be doing a piece there. And then Michelle can talk more about some of the things we're doing on the East Coast.
Yeah, so East-West, that's the name of the metaphysical store there. Okay. Mm-hmm. East-West, East-West Bookshop, the date hasn't been confirmed yet, but it will probably be in mid-June. So folks can go to my website, Michelle C. Johnson, and click on the workshops and trainings tab, and all of the events related to the Wisdom of the Hive are listed there, and we're adding them daily to the website. So that's a great way to stay attuned to what is and aware of what is coming up. If you are listening and you're on the East Coast and you're in North Carolina and in my neck of the woods in Winston or the Triad, we are having a book reading at Bookmarks NC, which is one of the local independent bookstores here in Winston-Salem. And that will be on Wednesday, May 21st at 6:30. If you are listening and you're in Georgia, we'll be at Eagle Eye Bookshop on May 22nd. And if you're in the Triangle area of North Carolina, we have a really fun event coming up on May 24th at 7 at Bright Black Candles. It will be a scent club. We will read from the book. We will share practices from the book. And they will have a candle going that is inspired by the honeybees and by the Wisdom of the Hive. And we have several other events coming up, including an online book club, which may be accessible to folks who are everywhere. The online book club begins on June 25th, and we meet on Wednesdays. It would be 10 a.m. to 11:30 Pacific time and 1 to 2:30 Eastern Standard Time. And again, that meets for 6 weeks, and Amy and I are co-facilitating that. But again, the website's the best way to keep up with things. I'm also posting things on social media, and my handle there is at Skill in Action.
Beautiful. I love that you guys are doing a book club, because I think I just know in my own work that having a live person guide you through certain things, just even having the accountability of, hey, let's get together and talk to this, another human being doing this, is invaluable and so supportive for working through this. So I love that you both are doing that. And I'm sure, because we didn't mention this, I don't think we did, but these two are best friends. They're like ride or dies. They describe one another. So you can imagine that being with them in a co-facilitated space is probably very luscious with that kind of energy in the room. So thank you. Well, it's been a pleasure to see you both at this moment in time and have this conversation. So thank you for being here. And I look forward to the upcoming events you have, because I will be seeing you soon.
Thank you so much, Amy. Yeah.
Yes, my pleasure.
Thank you, Amy, for having us. Always good to see you. And thank you for what you do and what you offer to the world, and for, you know, teaching us, guiding us in many ways.
So many ways.
Yes. My pleasure.
You're
you
a deep
too.
Teacher. We love you.
Love you both too. Okay. In closing, everyone, recall, you matter. You are not alone. We are here together. You are enough, just as you are. All my love. Guess what? The book, The Wisdom of the Hive, What Honeybees Can Teach Us About Collective Well-Being, comes out today. In the show notes, you will find a link to purchase your copy, which will benefit the Vashon Bookshop. I will also put Michelle's website in the show notes as well. As always, you can find out more about me and my work, including the programs, both my private and group, that these two lovelies did, at my website, aimecartier.com. This is Amy Cartier, and you have been listening to the Intuition for Changemakers show. All my love.
I am but a part of this. All I am is all I give. Everything that comes to me comes as sure as I will breathe.